Welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. This is a commentary episode of NYPD Blue Balls, and what that means is that while we recorded Season 7, Episode 6, Brothers Under Arms of NYPD Blue Balls, we were watching Season 7, Episode 6, Brothers Under Arms of NYPD Blue. So if you think it'd be better for your enjoyment, you can watch that episode while listening to this podcast, but you can do whatever you want. You make your own decisions. If you need those episodes of NYPD Blue, they are on Hulu, every single one. However, sometimes they have the syndication edits. The best way to make sure you're getting every single episode in its entirety is to check out the DVDs, which I honestly don't know where you can get them outside of the U.S. I know that sometimes they're on Best Buy, sometimes they're on Amazon, but that's the way to watch the entire show. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode. I'll be talking to you at the end. And until then, enjoy NYPD Blue and NYPD Blue Balls. See you at the end. 1, 2, 3, press. Hello, everybody, and welcome to NYPD Blue Balls. It's Season 7, Episode 6, Brothers Under Arms. And usually you do a shout out every time you see the Twin Towers. I was waiting for it.
A lot of foreshadowing in this episode. Or this season.
This episode starts weird because it started as if like they're in the middle of an investigation. Like they don't find a DNA.
Yeah, so you uncharacteristically were like, when we were talking, we're like, watch this episode. And so I was like, oh, maybe he's just saying it because it's been a while and this episode is combined or like a very close continuation of the last episode we did. So he just wants me to be like, to be on point. And then this started and I was like, oh shit, like let me pay attention. And then it has really nothing to do anything. And it's the weirdest, like, just like Martinez in the back, just smiling like an idiot. Like, like it was just weird. Like, I understand what they're trying to show here. They're trying to show Martinez is leaving. Like things still got to go on and whatnot. But like, it's just the weirdest thing.
It's also giving a little background and context of like, oh, these guys work with other detectives. Sometimes the other detectives are trash. The reason I wanted you to watch this video ahead of time has nothing to do with this. And when we get to it, I'll explain. Basically, I didn't want you to be surprised by something that we were going to talk about, if that makes sense. Like, I wanted you to not come in with, like, no idea of something that was going to happen in an episode when we discuss it.
I got you.
Because I think there's a very... I think there's a very interesting discussion to be had about something in this episode that would have been weird if you had just saw it just now and then had to come up with thoughts. Basically, Martinez is leaving.
this intro always makes me... this intro makes me, like, remember working at fucking... My last job was a bunch of older white men.
Mm-hmm.
They all say like such like yeah, of course I'm coming, Martinez. Greg says he's picking up the tab. Like shit like that. Like old like they're like, yeah, I'm gonna leave my best speech at home. like they're just like so corny and shit. Like I missed that part. That's what I feel like we're missing out on when people work from home, you know?
that cheesy camaraderie?
Yeah, we miss it. Like, that's why everyone needs to go back to an office.
Yep, that's why. That's the reason. We're all missing out on those cheesy jokes. Anyway, we're in the credits. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is Season 7, Episode 6, Brothers Under Arms, which I've already mentioned.
Real talk. Are you going to miss Martinez?
I don't know. I don't remember Jones. Like, I'm wondering if that's because he's not memorable. Spoiler alert. Jones is going to show up. But I don't know if it's because Jones
I was trying to be, like, as, like, not foreshadowy or like talk about the future as possible, and you straight up are just like, fuck it, Baldwin.
The only reason I did it is because on my screen right now, because I have the little heads up display on the Hulu, it has the title of the next episode, which is Along Came Jones. And anybody who's watched the show before, they might be wondering, like, where's Jones? He was on a long time.
Anyways, we'll talk more about the whole Martinez overall in a second.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we will.
We're watching, it's basically like Sisters. I feel like I'm watching an episode of Sister Sister. They're taking care of each other. They're looking out for each other. There's love.
Sister, and we're trying
to do the right things. Two cops, Kirk, just trying to do the right thing.
Well, it's awkward because Jill is the one in a jackpot because she mentioned the last episode, yeah, I did illegal shit for my husband, which we've never talked about before on the show. And then Russell was like, okay, cool, I'm willing to get possibly sexually assaulted by a creep in a bar to find out what he knows about your situation.
But in her defense, she didn't go there thinking she was going to get sexually assaulted.
No.
That kind of came up out of nowhere.
Yeah, because that dude is a fucking monster.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. You know who this famous face is, Kyle?
He's the fucking Black Ranger, bitch.
Black Power Ranger Walter Jones.
Yeah, you're coming at me like I don't know who the fucking Black Power Ranger is. Get the fuck out of here. Do you know who God is?
So, when you look up his, IMDb, it's weird because apparently he was additional crew on like random movies. So it's like the Black Power Ranger and then just the crew on some movies you might have heard of, which is so weird.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, Power Rangers were huge for us, dude, but I don't think they were. I don't think the acting skills were translating to like movie roles, you know.
Which kind of sucks because he does a good job in this. I mean, it's one scene.
Yeah, he does. He does a great job.
Where he's like, he was a shooting victim 2 years ago, and they found the same hit. They found a hit on the same gun that was used, so they want to know if he'll kind of fess up to who maybe shot him 2 years ago. And Sibowitz and Sorensen kind of hassle the fuck out of this dude.
So I think they do this a lot, which I think is unfair to people because a lot of the people that they deal with are fucking middle class people who work like blue collar jobs and shit, and they know that like they can fuck with those people and get their jobs taken away, you know?
Yeah.
And it's fucked up.
Yeah, because
like it's a really shitty thing because like you can kind of tell like he's being forced to talk to them, and then at the end he's like, I gotta go kiss my boss's ass, and they're just like, yeah, good luck, and they like make him go and instead of helping him out and shit. Like it's really fucked up how they do it.
And you know that these detectives, they could go up to that guy's boss and they could be like, hey man, this isn't a big thing. We need to get some information on a crime that happened involving him a long time ago where he wasn't the perpetrator. We just need to ask him some questions. But they don't do that.
Yeah.
They like drag him. Well, we don't see the beginning of the scene. They drag him out of there and talk to him in private. And I don't know. And then we have this guy. I believe this is Jason Wiggins.
Sibowitz comes at him really heavy for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, They don't have anything on him to come at him like this for. You know what I mean? Like,
well, they have the original shooting.
Yeah, but they're not investigating that.
No, they just know that they have that on him, and that's what they're using.
Yeah,
it's kind of a dickish thing, but it's true.
Kind of. Well, I mean, should we be surprised? It is kind of like it is like this show is great. Again, people are going to be like, why do you like the show? You talk a lot of shit about it. We just call out some things. And it seems like a lot of the times, like, they're not being honest cops.
Well, this, that's...
But they're, but they're being portrayed, but we're supposed to take them as, like, being these heroes and shit. You know what I mean?
Well, this part right here where Sipwith gets offended that the guy used his own metaphor against him.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, calm the fuck down. Like you brought out a metaphor. He jumped on it. He riffed with you. And then you got all pissed. And it's like, what are you pissed at me about?
Yeah. It's funny that, like, I find it funny that, like, okay, here comes the mom of Mr. Wiggins, right?
Yeah.
She's one of the main characters of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I find this episode funny that he, like, is so worried about how he's looked at in her eyes, this woman's eyes.
Oh, yeah.
But in the way he deals with these first two kids of color, he, like, could give a fuck
how
they feel about him.
Oh, yeah.
And he is, like, just, like, a fucking racist asshole to him.
Well, he... It is...
It's, like, weird. It's like their mother, like, in a weird way, humanizes them to Sipowitz, and now Sipowitz sees them as more than just their skin color.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. So this is, like, the weirdest episode ever, because, in a way, it seems like Sipowitz is learning, but also, the episode then challenges you with, is he learning? Because what happens is, this woman shows up for her son and is like, I don't have
Let's let it play out. This woman shows up.
Yeah.
And, like, basically protect, and basically tells Sipowitz, like, you have my son, that's great, but you're wrong. Like, he may have been a bad kid, but he came home, and we get the obligatory John shot that solidifies it. holding his heart, clutching his pearls, being like, oh my god, I believe that mother. But she's like, no, he was at home, I was taking care of him, he slept on the couch, he's not doing that shit anymore. And, like, she really is hammering home that her kid's a good kid, and they're like, look, you need to do what's right and help out these cops and just tell them the answer. They're not here to hurt you.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I understand so far.
And
she's trying to protect her son.
And there's also something that's really important. He is saying, hey, look, I know I didn't do anything wrong, but you're asking me to trust them.
Yeah.
And she's like, what choice do you have?
But I get where he's coming from. Like, 100%. Like, you don't think that he has fucking, like, trusted the cops before or something and been lied to about it? Like, I don't think he... I think he's done that before and he's been burned, and so he's done with it.
And this is the key scene. I think you might be behind me a little bit, but this is the key part. She then says, hey... Are you just going to hang my son out because you can't find the person that actually did it?
No, I'm there. And then Sipowitz says no.
And so then
he gives him the name.
And he gives his word. And in, like, at this point in the show, you're like, okay, well, Sipowitz, he may have a lot of problems. He may be wrong on some things. But right now, we know him as somewhat a man of his word. And...
Yeah,
he
always comes through with his word when he says he's going to do something.
So we know, at least from going forward, he is not trying to hurt this family in any way, which is important for the rest of the episode. He's like, I'm not going to hurt you guys if I can help it. Oh, hey, look, Denby's here. Super excited. Let's talk about this asshole for another fucking 15 minutes.
You know what I wish? I wish there... You know how, what's his name? I forget the dude's name. He's in Arrested Development. He does, like, the actors... Inside the actors studio or whatever.
James Lipton?
Yes. He sits down with the actors. And, like, Will Ferrell used to make fun of him. And he sits down with all these, like, really good prominent actors. I wish there was one that would sit down with people and be like, so, let's talk about, like, your horrible acting run on NYPD Blue as Deadbeat. Like, NYPD Blue was at the top of its peak. It was, like, mowing everybody down. What did they ask you to do, and what did you think you gave them? and do you know that your acting was fucking garbage?
Well, just because, I mean, we're talking over what he's doing, which is fine. He's trash. But he's basically like, oh, so last night I got way too drunk, which you saw. I blacked out, and Don, who I'm watching, escaped. And it's like, it's like, one, how is it that only one person is watching a witness? That's question number one. Question number two, how does nobody else know about it?
And oh, I have, you only have two questions? I have another question. right now, what are you supposed to be doing with Don at this moment instead of talking to Diane? Are you supposed to be watching him, or is someone else supposed to be watching him? Those other people that are supposed to be watching him, do they know he's missing? Like, there are so many fucking questions, like, that go unanswered in all of this.
And then we see Jill, who is talking to Don, because he called her.
Yeah. This was a little too quick for me. Like, this happened a little too fast. It was like, hey, Don's missing, and two, she walks upstairs, and, like, Jill's having a conversation with him. It was like, hey, give it a beat. Like, can we go to the next, like, can you have James come in and say something stupid, and then have her answer the phone or something?
Yeah, it was very fast. It was very, very fast. It's also like, to be John at this moment, right? Like, John is privy to so much shit that is happening in this department. And a lot of, and right now, illegal shit. The fact that he is just sitting on all of it and doesn't, like, at any point go, hey, Fancy? So, quick question. I want to talk to you about something.
Have you watched the TV show on HBO? You probably haven't. There's a lot. But it's David, the dude who did The Wire. It's called We Own the City.
Oh, I've seen ads for it, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's like, you should watch it when you get a chance. It's really fucking good. It's like 6 or 7 episodes, and it's about, like, a really, really corrupt, like, Baltimore police team. Yeah, the shit that they do is the shit that goes on in NYPD Blue. like, there's shit that's going on in that police department that's going on in this one all the time. Well, they're looked at as heroes, and, like, the people, and then, like, this story is, like, considered one of, like, the most corrupt, like, cop stories ever. You know, shit like that. It's crazy.
So this part here is Trey, who Jason Wiggins said that he rented his gun out to. You know, a little gun rental. Back in the day, we had video rentals, Blockbuster Video, before streaming killed it. And before you could stream guns, you had to go to a rental area. But he, to move on from that joke that didn't land... he is letting him know.
Kind of, I mean, I was trying to just move on through it without having to talk about it.
He's letting the detectives know that he rented the gun so he could give it to Jason's brother Robbie, because Robbie knew that Jason, his brother, wouldn't let him have a gun. And this is also where we learn that Robbie is having issues with Latasha.
This is over a woman.
Isn't it always?
Well, I mean, if we've learned anything, the first conflict ever was started because of a woman.
Okay, well,
Adam and Eve, baby. Had to eat that apple, huh?
And now we have a real big problem, because they now have to go after her other son.
Yeah, now they're in a huge jackpot, because they were not trying to do this today.
They were not trying to get caught up in this type of situation.
Not at all.
So here is what I wanted to talk about. He doesn't want to confirm their prejudices towards cops. Now,
I don't know what that means.
He doesn't want to
find out that they don't like him because he's a cop.
Well, he, from what I could tell, Sipowicz is worried that these people came into this situation going, the cops aren't here to help us. They're here to do bad things to us. And then when the when they helped them out, he promised them, like, hey, I'm not doing anything to you guys. I just need to figure out what happened. Now he has to tell her, by the way, by the way, we have to now talk to your other son. And then she confirms the DOA that they're talking about. So now,
okay.
So now Sipowicz is worried that even though they've earned a little bit of trust on both ends, now they're just going to throw away all trust they ever had for them because it happens to be her other son caught up in it. And right about now, he's like, you have our word. We're not trying to hurt your family. And she kind of comes back with, yeah, sure, your word. Like, that meant anything to us anyway. Because they may have had run-ins with police earlier, which I believe her other son has.
Okay, so what's your question?
Oh, I don't have a question. I thought I was explaining.
No. But at the beginning, we started out, like, I felt like there was a question coming.
Oh, like, at the very beginning, we still haven't gotten to the one I wanted to ask, which I think blows up the entire point of this episode in the minds of the writers. with one bit of dialogue, it completely throws away what they were trying to do. But we'll get there.
Why does every time Kirkendall talks to her husband on the phone, does it sound like she's a phone sex operator? She's just, every time she's whispering, and it's like super sexual. Listen.
Well, I love this.
Call this number, 45 minutes.
I love this part where Russell's like, hey, so you're going to my fucking house? were you gonna let me know? Because now I'm a straight up accessory.
Yeah.
So Kirkendall is like, I'm gonna go meet Don at your place and tell him to fuck off, I guess. And then Russell's like, well, I guess you left me no choice.
Yeah, she, like, I don't know, like, if this is your friend, I wouldn't even do this to you.
No. No way.
Like, I wouldn't just, like, there's no way I'd ever call you and be like, hey, I need your key to your place right now.
I need your
key. My Maria's on the run, and, like, we need to talk real quick. Like, you know what I mean?
It would never occur to me to just be like, yeah, they'll give me a place to, you know, commit felonies. Like, of course.
Yeah, like, It's such a crazy. Like, not even ask. She doesn't ask. She just does it. After that whole conversation they have where, like, what's her face?
Russell?
Diane's like, You should answer the phone. You should find out where he is. You should turn him in. You should get it over with. Like, you could start your own life. Like, you can get yourself back to you again and some shit, like, whatever, you know, all that shit. And then she's like, oh, I mean he's still the father or something, like, I can't just, like, turn him in like that. And then immediately he calls back again, and then she's like, okay, let's go here. I feel like it's very bipolar.
You mentioned in the last episode, because I just finished editing the last episode, that you think that there's a possibility that when NYPD Blue writers know that a character isn't long for the show anymore, they then let them act shitty or write terrible shit for them. And I honestly think, looking back on all these episodes, that Jill Kirkendall's entire character was, like, being made to have us, like, hate her. Like, she makes nothing but bad decisions in this season. Like, nothing but bad decisions.
I mean, I guess the way you could look at it is, like, they set her up as this, like, strong, independent mom, right? Mm-hmm. Which, like, she is. Like, Danny talks about, like, taking her out a few times. Like, when she first gets there and we don't know about, she doesn't know about Diane and Bobby. She, like, makes a pass at Bobby. Like, you know, she's supposed to, like, people are like, oh, she's hot. Like, check out the Kirkendalls on Kirkendall, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
but then, like, maybe that's what this season is supposed to show us. But, like, for some reason, Dawn is just, like, her kryptonite.
That Dawn D. That Dawn to Dawn, Dawn, Dawn.
I don't know what I'm saying. Maybe Dawn got a big old D, dude. We don't know.
We skipped over a scene with Medavoy and Martinez, which was just to remind us that this is Medavoy or Martinez's last episode. he is being promoted.
This is the shittiest last episode for somebody. Can we be real about that?
He's barely in it. There's even a scene.
Okay, Sylvia got shot.
Yep.
Sylvia had like was having the fucking like trial of her life and got shot. That was her last like goodbye to us.
Yeah.
Sylvia got shot. Like fucking what's his name? Caruso went out with like a fucking huge trial. Him and his like side chick, like huge trial gone. Like they had like these big old things, like they were prominent, and then like fucking Meth Martinez is just like in the background holding boxes, smiling at everyone like a pedophile.
And then like, yeah, he's just gone.
And he's just gone. Like we'll get to the end of it. They have like a goodbye for him, but like I don't know.
This scene right here, I wanted to highlight, Eric George is playing Robbie Wiggins. And I thought he did a great job of just a guy who went back to get a ring that he gave to his girlfriend who was stolen from an ex-boyfriend. He ended up shooting him after the guy came after him. And, it seems like a open and shut self-defense situation, and the detectives are phrasing things for him to make it be a self-defense situation. Wow, I whistled very hard.
Yeah, I like the way they were like, they kept doing that. Like, they kept going like, so it's safe to say that like you didn't pull the gun out yet.
Yeah, you were worried like, this guy was going to kill you. He had a gun, he made it clear.
At this point, you hadn't done anything to, like, warrant him to do X, you know? They're really trying to, like, help him and make sure that he's okay.
Okay, this is the scene I'm talking about. So they're looking to talk to Fancy about getting, like, getting permission to, like, kind of go forward with what they want to do. And then Sipowicz fucking shushes this woman twice. At this moment, I was like, and then they have some pithy reference to Austin Powers.
Not only Austin Powers, but Dr. Evil.
Yeah. That moment right there,
That moment right there, him walking down the stairs, every time I watch that, I swear to God, I feel like Dad's in the room. And he's going to get pissed whenever he hears that or finds out that I said that. But that was like some dad shit.
Where he doesn't understand the reference and he misunderstands it as Evil Knievel.
He's like, oh, Dr. Evil.
So this scene is stupid.
Okay. This scene's great because as soon as he walks in, he's straight up just like, this is what I love is if Bobby was around, Bobby would have wiped the floor with this dude.
Bobby would have beat the shit out of this guy. It would have been so much fun. Uh-oh. What I love is Dawn walks into this room and goes, who's Bobby Simone? And she's like,
yeah, who's he to you? Who's this guy?
And she's like, Dawn. And he's like, oh, well, I guess you had to move on. It's like, fuck you, dude.
Did he say that? Or does he say, I guess you gotta live your life?
Yeah. And it's like, fuck you, Dawn, you fucking idiot. Like, you're such an asshole.
He is fucking, he is like the poster boy for nagging, bro.
He is also the poster boy for stupidity. Because he's like, I'm going to get out of here, and then I'm going to come back and get some revenge. It's like, on fucking who, you dumb shit? Like, what are you...
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna make some stops along the way. It's
yeah,
like,
he's,
dude,
he's a dummy.
Where are you going to stop? Where are you going to stop, dog?
So, she's like, I'll give you some money, and I don't ever want to see you again. And he's like, okay, I guess that's cool. And
my favorite is that he's the way he asks her for money.
Oh yeah, he's like, you got anything for me?
He's like, do you have any money for me? And then she just looks at him and is like, yeah, I didn't have a way to like wrap that up in a pretty bow for you. Like, basically, like, I didn't have a way to wrap that question up in a pretty bow for you. And it's like, dude, what a douche, man.
Also, I looked it up. With how much she gives him, that's the equivalent of $1,400 today.
Holy fuck.
And then he stole...
Not good enough for him, dude. Think about that.
And then he stole Bobby's ring, and I was like, I forgot what happens at the end of this episode, but when he did that, I was like, this dude deserves to die. Like, you don't touch Bobby's shit. You don't do it.
Question, though.
Uh-huh.
The question that is like, why did he steal Bobby's ring?
Because honestly, because he wanted to pawn it probably or sell it to get some more money.
Okay. We'll wait till the end. We'll wait till the end. Remember the Bobby thing.
Hmm. So then we have this awkward thing where they're like, let's go talk about clearly the fucked up things we were doing. And pretend that nobody knows about. A little key handoff, and then her saying, like, I think I just bought my freedom. And I was like, you know what else would have bought your freedom? Turning him the fuck in.
Yeah.
But, you know, what do I know? I don't know when we're going to talk about it, but I wanted to talk about why that shushing scene is so important, at least in my mind.
Why?
Because this whole episode was about, well, not the whole episode, but the Sipowicz Sorensen story was about Sipowicz coming to terms with his own prejudices and then how other people's prejudices make him feel so that maybe he can walk a mile in their shoes, right? Like, you have a situation where he's like, oh, these people won't trust us, these people, their prejudices. And then on the other side, the way he's treating people of color, things like that. But it comes to a head where he finds out that there's a really good chance that both of her sons are going to come out of this okay. But he can't talk to her until he talks to Fancy first. And she, understandably, is really concerned and is trying to ask questions. And he straight up shushes her, a grown woman who has two boys in custody. And that,
Go ahead.
And that reestablishes that he still has the power here. It destroys, like, all the nuance of what they set up in one act, which is, hey, no matter what you feel, I'm still in charge. And it was like, what a fucked up thing to do to a person. Like, hey, I understand you're concerned. Stop talking. I need to do this. And it was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I understand you can't explain it to her, but what you did was so rude and disrespectful, and there's nothing she can do about it. Like, that scene on its own was like, wow, what a fucked up thing to do. And right now, he's literally passing the buck of the mess he's made to Fancy.
Everything you said is true. I have no arguments with that. I don't think he's looking for Fancy so he can explain what's going on. I think he's looking for Fancy the whole time so he doesn't have to talk to her.
That could be true too. That could be, yeah.
Like, every time he's like looking for Fancy, so it's not like this is the only scene here where he at this point is like, where's Fancy? like, he's been looking for Fancy for a while. Mm-hmm. And now he finally has all the information. But he was looking for Fancy, like, four seasons ago when he didn't have all the information. Mm. And I think he's just constantly looking for Fancy so he doesn't have to talk to her anymore. Because instead of, like, being a grown-up and, like, just solving the crime and or the case and doing the right thing at the same time, he is so worried about what she thinks of him and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, if you were just to do everything correctly, take care of it, I think she could see that. Like, I don't know.
Well, I do think that the situation, and that's what I think the writers did. They're like, well, what do you expect Sipowicz to do? And it's like, dude, okay, I understand that this is a very delicate situation, and there's a lot of feelings and a lot of context in this situation, but at no point did you need to shush an adult woman. At no point...
Oh, yeah, and...
Yeah, like, that was the moment that was like, okay, we get it, you're in charge, what you say goes. But, like, this situation, even if you came out of it and she still felt poorly about what you did... You know you did the best you could. He knows he did some shitty things here. He now leaves looking like a dick.
Oh, I'm telling you right now. Maybe it's the time of the year, or maybe it's the year. I don't know. But if a bold white man like Sipowicz was to shush any black woman in New York City, I don't think that's the way it would go.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
I don't think she'd calmly just be like, oh, okay, that's cool, I'll take that.
And this scene, and this scene is kind of cool because Fancy now has to represent their work, and he just straight up says to her, like, look, we're going to have to keep your boys, but understand, we don't think it's going to go anywhere, and our detectives aren't going to pursue, which usually means they won't go to bat for it, because it looks bad in court if the guys who did the investigation aren't on the side of prosecuting.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, what if that doesn't work out? And he's like, they're gonna do their best. And then she's like, I hold him responsible. And Fancy's like, he knows.
But it's also so weird that, like, as soon as he comes back, like, the first thing Sipowicz asks him is, like, did she make any derogatory comments? Like, dude, why do you care so much? Like, last episode, you were putting, like, people of color into jail, no problem.
Well, I think...
you didn't care what they were thinking about you. Like, why all of a sudden is it this? Like, why does this bother you?
Beforehand, it didn't
bother you. When you were talking to her son before you knew she was involved, you could have given a shit about, like, what... their son's feeling and shit, you know? I don't know. It's just weird to me.
Oh, wow. I can hear your episode now. I heard the tinks. Here we got Medavoy giving a speech for Martinez. I think, we could talk about it after the episode's over, but I think it's Sipowicz, like, feeling what remorse he can for how shitty he has been. And he doesn't want anyone to think those things about him because he feels like he's getting better, but he still has his things he's got to work on. So he's like, oh man, I don't want you to think these things about me, even though it is still a problem. And then here's a situation that I couldn't even control, and now it looks bad for me, but I don't want to face it. I just want it to be over with. But here, Medavoy gives a rousing speech about Martinez as a partner who, I mean, they've been partners for, I mean, since what, season one?
Yeah, midway through season one.
So, yeah, it's been, I mean, it's been about seven seasons. Well, six seasons.
I told you to remember something for the end of the episode. What was it?
Oh, we were just talking about Martinez. One, are you gonna miss him? And then I think two was he has like the worst last episode, which I feel like they thought this scene makes up for him not getting a huge exit. because it's a real big cop function where people are giving speeches. I love that they mentioned Gina. You remember his wife that we haven't seen in like 3 years?
Yeah, right? Sid was just makes like some like random like good for Gina.
It's like to, and if anybody remembers, it's like we're not paying that actress anymore. We haven't seen her in forever.
Yeah, remember she got stabbed?
She got slashed in the face. Then he just openly admits that he's gonna be nicer to them when he's their boss. It is weird to see like the background actors like in casual wear at this thing. Like the guy right behind Martinez is like the dude that's always by the filing cabinet.
Oh, the black guy.
he's always by the filing cabinet moving files.
What are you talking about, Kirk? That's the clothes that he wears when he's upstairs.
I thought he was wearing a more uniform thing, but you are right.
Like, that's what he's always wearing. It's like the guy who, when Sipwitz and Danny left today, they tell the guy, like, hey, Hank, watch it. Like,
oh, yeah, Hank.
He's always wearing, like, the same, like, kind of suit. Like,
I think it's Hank and Tony. I think those are those guys. Or Anthony.
Yeah.
So here, I remember this scene, like, blowing my mind only because of the very, very end of it. Where basically, like, Denby is like, man, I had a date, and then I found this dead body. Look, she's here to confirm that I had a date. I don't know why.
Like, why you need to have her confirm you had a date? I don't get it.
It's just to have this scene where Bobby's ring makes his way back to its rightful owner. That's
so
like,
this is why I don't understand why he took Bobby's ring.
Well, he didn't.
What was the point of Bobby's ring if they were just going to do this? Like he didn't. Like Don never knew that was Diane's pad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So why would Don take the ring?
I think he just
to use in this capacity.
I think he took it literally to just sell it to get more money. Like, that was his plan.
Okay.
I do think that they made this scene to kind of, I don't know what the word is. Also, could you turn down your episode? I think I hear Russell. But the point, I think the whole point is... I think the point is like Denby wanted her to confirm that it was Don because of the ring, because she's the closest thing to Don besides Jill. And then I think this whole scene is just to kind of like provide like a super close call. Like, oh my God, Russell could have been in this jackpot too. If they figured out whose ring that was, but because Denby's on the case, fucking around and finding out, it turned out okay for all the parties involved.
You're probably right.
Like, it was literally, like, it's what I call the lost effect. They were just writing things so that people would be like, oh, shit! But it really doesn't make any sense when you think about it. Like, why did they have the ring change hands just to change hands at the very end? It's just to make people go like, oh, shit, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't, like, the ring thing makes sense to me in the sense because I've seen every episode.
Like, yeah.
The ring thing doesn't make sense to me, I mean, because I've seen every episode, and so I'll try to make a note of this ring, the ring controversy, and try to bring it up later.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of was like a self-closing story arc of like, oh my god, he stole the ring. What is Russell going to do when she finds out? And it's like, Russell gets back the ring. And it's like, okay, so then there's no reason for this to even happen. But I guess just to identify the body, that it's definitely Dawn in the weirdest way possible. But yeah, that's it is what it is. I guess final thoughts. We didn't really get into the minutiae of, well, we did, but like the prejudices on both sides and which one is more realistic and understandable, and then how one demonstrates that they just have the power no matter what, which is kind of fucked up.
I didn't feel that she had a prejudice at all. I felt like she straight up was just dealing with the cops with how she knows how to deal with cops. I think Sipwith, for some reason, was like making this all about race, and that when at the beginning of the episode, he could have given a fuck about like those two black men that he was talking to and all of that until she got involved. Like, for some reason, like, I don't know if it was because it was her or what, but
You did touch that it humanized the dude he was talking to, and then with the context, his whole demeanor changed. And then,
yeah,
and then at the end of the episode, or towards the end of the episode, he's like, I don't want them to think that I intentionally screwed them, but I have no problem shutting them down when I need to. Which was like, you're missing the point, dude. You're missing the point completely. But yeah, that's just how that's how I saw it. And then the other big thing, we're goodbye to Martinez. He's gone. He has been promoted.
Again, are you gonna miss him?
I feel like they've been underutilizing him, so like I don't think I will. You know? Like, I remember him being around a lot more in the earlier seasons and being a part of things.
Yeah, I feel like him and Meadow Boy had, like, their own adventures. Like, they had way more of their own adventures and shit. Like, they did their own investigations. Like, it just seemed like there was more stuff going on with them.
And now, like, with the focus on Jill kind of taking it away from them, and I think they're trying to put a lot of focus on Sorensen too, that like he wasn't featured and he wasn't in the spotlight. So when they're like, oh, he's leaving, it's less of a like, oh man, I'm bummed he's leaving, and more of like, well, what was he doing? Like, he was just kind of in the background of stuff, and it's not fair because he was a pretty good character for a long time.
Yeah, in the beginning he was not bad.
And he was a good foil to Medavoy, where Medavoy is your older, crotchety white cop, and then Martinez is the younger person of color, kind of like different perspective on things. And then they kind of just put both of them on the bench, and they bring out Medavoy, I think, just to annoy you on occasion.
No, because I think Medavoy is the anti Andy. So sometimes you have to have Medavoy say and do some things,
mm-hmm.
because like he's the older cop. He has an older mindset, but like he's not Andy all the time.
Yeah,
and then sometimes he is Andy. Like sometimes he says some racist shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like. Sometimes he does have like bigoted views. Sometimes he, you know, like. But I think that's why for Martinez, I don't know what it was. Like, maybe you're right. Maybe it was like the Jill Kirkendall effect of it all.
Yeah, it really it. And I don't have any insight on what happened to Nicholas Turturro, who plays Martinez. But it seemed like they took the focus off of him. And, you know, had him around to be like the third wheel on some cases. And then they were just like, and he's promoted and he's gone. And it just felt like, okay, well, I guess he's not as important as you mentioned, a Sylvia or a Caruso or a, I'm intermixing character and actor names. John Kelly and Sylvia and Simone and all them. It was just kind of like, and he's gone. And he's gone. Making way for the next episode, Along Came Jones. And then I guess, you know, another departure by Don. Don ain't going to be around because he's been, like, decapitated and burnt.
Damn, no, he has... His kappa was hated.
He also has no hands, I think. I think they got rid of all identifying marks.
Yeah. Yeah, he can't be... He can't... They can't identify him. They're just hoping... That's why Denby is, like, hoping that this ring says that it's his.
And that he gave it to fucking Russell. So it's, you know, it's weird because I honestly don't remember how that wraps up. If this is just the end of that, I can't imagine it is. It was like, where do you even go from here? Like, okay, so he's dead. Jill thinks that he's done with him. For all intents and purposes, she doesn't have to know that.
Jill doesn't know yet.
No, I mean, for all like intents and purposes, she doesn't even need to know. She could just say that, oh, he's gone. And they found a body once, and we don't know if it's Don's or not. Like, you know. But I forgot how this all wraps up. But we're going to find out in more episodes of NYPD Blue. Oh, and one more thing that I forgot to mention. The woman who played Lorraine Wiggins, Tina Lilford? Lifford. I thought she did a great job, so I looked at her IMDb page, and she was one of the voices of the sheep in Babe.
That's cool.
One of the sheep from Babe. Not Babe 2, Pig in the City. Original OG Babe. And she played.
That's awesome.
And she played a sheep. I don't know anything else that she's ever been in, but she was a sheep in Babe.
Now that you say that, the voice sounds familiar.
It sounds like one of the Ba Ram You. Anyway, have anything else to say about this episode?
No, not really. I mean, I like the episode. There's a lot of good acting in it. Yeah, I got no problems with it. I just think there's a lot of funny things in it. Like the level that Sipowicz goes to, like, prove that this woman is more prejudiced than him is kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
Like, he is on a mission. Like, he's, like, very Ben Shapiro about it. Or he's like, I'm here to show you that this person is more bigoted than me because, like, they think that, you know, there's, like, this, like, weird, like, white supremacy happening. So I'm going to show you that they're more bigoted than I am type shit, you know?
Yeah. I understand exactly what you mean.
It's really weird. But I've watched this episode a few times, and it's just so weird, like, the extent he goes to.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. That's why I wanted to watch it ahead of time, because it's like, I think that if we got to that stuff, like, cold, we wouldn't have much of a discussion. I thought I would just be like, wow, yeah, that's crazy. But when you sit and think about it, you're like, wait, he's worried about their prejudices, and he literally has both of her kids in custody. And not giving her information... And then when she's like, can you tell me what's going on? He just goes, shush.
Yeah. Instead of, like, explaining to her how he's going to try to get her kids out, yeah, he's just like, shut up. We'll, like, see what happens.
And I know we're dragging this out, but, like, even in his mind where he's like, oh, I legally can't tell her, we need to go look for a gun to prove your son's story, which looks like was in self-defense. Even if he's legally not allowed to say that, keep in mind, in that very same room, Jill Kirkendall just aided and abetted her felon husband, like, four seconds ago. But he can't be like, okay, so I didn't tell you this, but...
And it seems like everyone knows that she's aiding and abetting her husband.
Like, everybody in the department knows. So it is kind of a weird, like, I can't talk to you about what's going on with your son. I can shush you and talk down to you.
Yeah.
It's just, it's all over the joint in weirdness. And I don't know. That was Brothers Under Arms. Thank you for listening to this episode of NYPD Blue Balls. Every single episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available where you listen to your podcasts and AsherBrothersPodcast.com. Also available where you find your podcasts and AsherBrothersPodcast.com is the Asher Brothers Podcast. Mostly just featuring random conversations between Kyle and me. There hasn't been a new one in quite a while, but that doesn't mean there won't be new ones soon. I don't know when, because I have been very busy. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, there's a couple of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. And An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall, which is 99 cents on Amazon. If you want to know when new episodes are coming out, it's every other Tuesday, but you can follow us on Twitter at Asher Bros Pod. You can follow us on Instagram at Asher Brothers Podcast. It is pretty much only me announcing when new episodes of the show are out. Thank you for listening. If you have a moment to rate and review, I'd appreciate it, because if you review it high, people might find the podcast and end up watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Peace.